and welcome to the Senate Revenue Committee. Today we have our hearing, public hearing and possible work session on four items. The first committee I will ask you to consider is a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 130. And I will ask for an orientation to this bill out of the usual custom. Instead of asking staff to give us an orientation, I will ask Senator Minnis to make a brief presentation on why we have before us, or should I say, back before us, Senate Bill 130.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Revenue Committee, this bill was originally in the Revenue Committee and was sent to the Judiciary Committee for its review because it dealt with the awarding of attorney's fees in tax court, dealing with ad valorem property tax issues. And our committee favorably, we heard the bill favorably, reported it out. However, we forgot that there was a subsequent re-referral back to this committee, and so it's been kind of being held in abeyance until we got the procedures wired together here. And so the bill, in essence, would allow for a judge to determine or award attorney's fees to the prevailing party in an ad valorem property tax decision for the tax court. And I would ask that this committee simply report it to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation or without recommendation, whichever the chair's preference. There is a due pass recommendation on behalf of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
And so, Senator, we initially had the bill. We referred the bill to you. You heard the bill. The bill passed out of your committee with a due pass recommendation on the votes of Senators Beyer, Burdick, Courtney, Duncan, Harper, and that's for a minute. You noted for the record that there was a referral to our committee, and our choices are to refer the bill to your committee.
Yes.
Or to pass the bill out with a due pass or no recommendation to the floor. I see no reason to engage the committee in a rehearing of the bill we've already had before us and referred to your committee, nor do I see a reason to re-refer the bill to your committee. I'll ask the committee's indulgence to pass the bill to the floor with no recommendation, with the carrier to be Senator Minnis.
So moved.
Let me open a work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 130. Senator Corcoran, you had a hand in the air.
Well, the only question, maybe Senator Minnis can answer it because he heard it in Judish, but the only question I would have is just sort of historically, if current law had allowed for attorney fees in income tax and inheritance tax appeals, why weren't they allowing it in ad valorem appeals?
That's a good question, and I do not know the answer. I don't know if there was a rational decision made on behalf of legislature to not award it. I think oftentimes we have inconsistent decisions in this process. We did not have anybody come in and tell us that there was any outstanding justification or rationale for not doing it.
Okay.
And again, it is the decision of the judge to award or not award those attorney's fees.
Except that he can't, Mr. Chair, in the case of without this bill.
That's right.
Okay.
Senator Beyer, did you have a question or did you wish to make a motion?
Okay. I think I don't have a question anymore. I'd make the motion to move the Senate Bill 130 to the floor without recommendation.
Are there questions on the motion? Are there objections to the motion? So ordered. Senator Minnis will carry. Close the work session on Senate Bill 130. And the public hearing on Senate Bill 130. And that moves that item off our agenda. Colleagues, thanks for your consideration. Let's move to our agenda. Today we have House Bill 2612, House Bill 2677, and House Bill 2777. Let us begin with House Bill 2612, and we'll ask for an orientation for the committee from our able and competent staff. So to introduce the able and competent staff, Ms. Martin Meyer. Exactly. Ms. Martin Meyer, welcome. Good morning.
Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members, we have House Bill 2612A back again. And let me just refresh your memory on what this bill does. It allows the Board of Property Tax Appeals to hear reductions in real market value and assessed values when the property has been damaged or destroyed and reassessed as of July 1st. It also allows an appeal of a maximum assessed value if the property has been damaged or destroyed due to fire of act of God and the assessment date is July 1st. And then we extended that then to allow maximum assessed value to change if the property has been damaged or destroyed for any reason in the, that was done on the house side. And it also is conforming ORS 308-428 to 308-146 by deleting the requirement the property must be damaged or destroyed by fire of act of God. Now what you have with you is an A2 and an A3 amendment. Now with the A2, what this is doing is, and we had discussion last time about criminal acts and how we should treat this change in assessment date from January 1st to July 1st and whether or not that should be allowed for criminal acts. So, and Representative or Senator Minnis wanted that kind of a criteria allowed so that just property that has been damaged or destroyed as a result of a criminal act by the owner shall not then have this change in the assessment date from January to July 1st. So that's what this bill is doing, is it's narrowing it and saying those properties that have been damaged or destroyed by a criminal act shall not have this change then from of the assessment date from January 1st to July 1st. Now, what you also have is an A3 amendment, and what this is doing is it's dealing with land that ceases to be used as a cemetery, but and it is going to allow then a continuation of that property tax exemption for that property that is owned or purchased by a charitable institution. So basically what you have there is the property was originally exempt because it was a cemetery, and then it is going to be sold to a charitable institution that also could be property tax exempt. And so this is allowing just then that exemption to occur through this transfer of ownership and change of use, where additional taxes will not be assessed then on the property. And this applies to property tax years on or after July 1st of 2001.
Okay, and we have, colleagues, do you have any questions about the orientation? Hearing none, let us move to the public hearing on Senate Bill 2612. And we have a couple of folks that have signed up. Let's talk to Mr. DiLorenzo and Mr. Stuff about, I believe, their ASH 2 amendments. Is that? Or excuse me, the dash 3. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good. And you?
Good. Thank you.
Good morning.
I think this is a dead issue, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John DiLorenzo. I'm here to address this very grave issue. I am an attorney with the firm Hagen, Dye, Hershey, and DiLorenzo in Portland, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Lewis and Clark College. Also with me is Mr. Scott Staff, who is the Vice President for College Relations at Lewis and Clark. We're here to this morning to propose and advocate the A3 amendments to the bill, which are dated March 12, 2001. Lewis and Clark has an interest in acquiring some surplus property which is currently owned by a cemetery association. The association has never devoted the property to burial sites and has an interest in selling that surplus property to the college. The college intends to use the property eventually to build facilities to further its educational purposes. Oregon law currently provides an exemption from property tax for all lands that are used and held for cemetery purposes. However, the law also provides that when cemetery land that is exempt from property tax ceases to be used or held exclusively for that purpose, the land is then further subject to a 10-year rollback penalty. And the rollback penalty, in essence, is recapture of 10 years' worth of property tax that was otherwise excused. So, in other words, should the Cemetery Association transfer its surplus property to any party, including Lewis and Clark College, the new owner would be obligated to pay a 10-year rollback penalty. Although there is some authority in a 1986 Attorney General's opinion which could support the position that the rollback penalty should not apply when cemetery land is transferred to another exempt entity, the law is far from clear in that area. The A3 amendments before you, therefore, provide that whenever land which has previously been held exclusively for these purposes is transferred to another charitable institution for use in connection with educational purposes, that the transferee need not be burdened with the rollback penalty. Those substantive provisions are contained at page 2, lines 7 through 17 of the amendment. Now, the amendment further provides that should the transferee, the college, let's say in this case, further transfer the property to someone else, there could be a rollback penalty, but the rollback penalty would be reduced by the period of time in which the charitable institution owned the property. That change, which is intended to eliminate potential abuses, is included at page 2, lines 18 through 30 of the amendment. The remainder of the amendment applies the rule to property owned or being owned by charitable institutions on or after January 1, 2001, and to property tax years beginning July 1, 2001. The college would like to acquire the property, but does not wish to do so if the rollback penalties would be assessed against it, and we ask that you favorably consider this amendment for four basic reasons. First, we do not believe that the legislature originally intended the recapture penalties to be imposed upon other charitable institutions. Second, this amendment has a very narrow application, should not have any revenue effect on local government since it does not deprive local government of any taxes which they are currently receiving. Third, failure to adopt the amendment would simply chill the transfers of land between charitable institutions. And finally, the existing law encourages cemetery associations with surplus land to sell the land for commercial or residential development rather than to transfer it for educational and charitable purposes. By exempting education and charitable institutions from the rollback penalty, you will make it attractive for the cemetery associations to sell their surplus lands to these types of institutions. Chairman, members of the committee, I have discussed this proposed change with Representative Shetterly, the chairman of the House Revenue Committee. He has indicated that he supports the amendment, and should you pass favorably upon it, would be pleased to move to confer in the Senate amendments on the House floor. We're here to respond to any questions, should you have any.
Senator Minnis, can't contain himself any further.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I always look at the legislative process as also an educational process, and I'm always amazed at the new words that I learned here. Eleemosynary.
Eleemosynary.
What in the world is that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Minnis, first of all, it is not a new word. It's an extremely old word. I think it probably, at some point, you may want to consider eliminating the word from the legislative lexicon, but it means charitable, essentially.
I see.
I'm sure this isn't just a sneaky provision.
Hey, Lorenzo. Come on.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, I assure you, I promise you, it is not a sneaky provision.
I noticed Corcoran, the testator, did not stake his reputation on
it. Well, and it also makes me nervous, Mr. Chair, when the, what was your title again?
My title?
Yeah.
Vice President for College Relations.
College Relations from Lewis and Clark's testifying with Mr. DiLorenzo, that makes me very nervous. I want to make no bones about it. Substantive question,
I hesitate to ask, but I will anyway. Mr. Stuff, do you have anything that you wish to add to this?
Just ignore you.
I think that Mr. DiLorenzo made a comprehensive presentation of the college's position on the matter.
Thank you. Senator Minnis, did you get your question?
Actually, I have one more.
Yes, sir.
Educational purposes. Would that be what? What kind of educational purposes? Where is that defined?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Minnis, that is defined in ORS 307, Chapter 307, which talks about educational purposes, including those, I'm going to paraphrase it, including those maintained by a college. So any purpose that a college or university would devote that property to would likely be classified as educational purposes, unless the college or university had a side business or generation of revenue, in which case that would not be educational purposes.
And I don't mean to bring this up now, but it is an issue. I don't know what the statute says with respect to colleges which may or may not be accredited. I'm specifically thinking of those Bible colleges that exist that are governed by churches that are not accredited because accrediting institution refuses to accredit them because their governing body is a church as opposed to some other entity, and there is one specific. And so I'm wondering whether or not if a college not accredited could also benefit from acquiring property that is a cemetery property.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Minnis, I'm not absolutely certain as to the answer to that question, but I suspect it has more to do with whether or not the Internal Revenue Service and the Department of Revenue would recognize the entity as tax-exempt and as educational in nature. I don't think accreditation really has much to do with its tax effect.
All right. Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Jones?
Thank you.
We have one other who has signed up for testimony on House Bill 2612, and that is Mark Noakes of the Linn County Assessor's Office. And if you would come forward, please. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Mark Noakes, and I am the Linn County Assessor down in Albany and tax collector. And I'm here to probably speak more to the Dash 2 amendments, certainly not the Dash 3 amendments, although I might answer that in answer to the question by Senator Minnis that those organizations may be considered religious organizations and be exempt under those statutes rather than educational. So, the uncertainties by this bill, if someone were to ask me what I'd rather do, I'd rather go back to the language in the original bill and go from there. But quite frankly, the concerns we have from an assessment standpoint would be the uncertainties and possibly the defining of damaged and destroyed. The Dash 2 amendments seem to me anyway narrowly define something, and we have discussed briefly in the hallway with Lizbeth potentially changing the language to intentional or unintentional acts versus a criminal act. From my standpoint, many times we are called out by property owners telling us to remove a value because a building has been destroyed. And it was an intentional destruction. They destroyed it. They wanted to remove it because they're going to replace it with another structure. So I certainly would encourage some language that would differentiate between intentional versus unintentional if you so choose to change that.
Chair.
Senator Minnis?
Clarification. Do you have the Dash 2 amendment in front of you?
No, I don't.
The word criminal appears on line 5. Are you suggesting that we substitute the word criminal or intentional for criminal? That it changed.
Yes, I do.
I don't think it does any damage to it. In fact, it might be helpful. Probably much easier for you to determine whether or not the person did so intentionally as opposed to whether it was a criminal versus non-criminal act.
So what is the suggested change?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, the suggested change is instead of line 5 of the Dash 2, the result of a criminal act, instead of criminal act, of a intentional intentional act by the owner, the assessment date may not be changed from January 1st.
Take Mr. Chairman,
just one more change.
Yeah.
On line 5, you would delete the words a criminal and insert an intentional.
So it's an amendment to the amendment? Okay.
Yes. Although, Mr. Chairman, again, I think by our rules, we have to suspend the rules to do what's considered to be a...
Unless we were to, as a group, consider this to be a Scrivener's error.
Yes.
An inadvertent error.
I think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. I'm convinced of
it. Any further questions for Mr. Noakes and Mr. Noakes's discussion of and citation of the Scrivener's error that occurs in line 5 is duly noted for the record. Any other person here present who wishes to offer testimony on House Bill 2612? If not, the chair is inclined to go into work session.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just a procedural question. If this is a Scrivener's error, then are we creating a record basically that that states that intentional is criminal? Because I think we want it to be broader than criminal. You could do damage to a piece of property. If you're just irritated and you want to tear your house down with a bulldozer, it's not against the law.
Excellent, Mr. Chairman. I think the change actually does make it a little bit broader. I think almost all criminal acts, other than those that might have negligence as a qualifier, include some level of intent.
As a matter of fact, Senator, isn't that the burden of proof with a criminal prosecution is intentionality?
There are some that are reckless, kind of could have known or should have known. Kind of things, but that's just based on this reasonable man model thing, which I don't think we need to get into. But this actually could go a little bit further. I think the assessors, viewed the conduct of the property owner. They destroyed their own property. It wasn't necessarily criminal, but it also was something that they felt was inappropriate. They could make a decision based on that, too. So,
nevertheless, I think Senator Corcoran raises an issue. I think we will not consider this a Scrivener's error. Let's consider a...
Well, I think you could still do it now that we have on the record.
We can do it with a suspension of the rules, and if that's an appropriate, more perhaps appropriate than wrenching the construction of Scrivener's error, which in fact I think probably we should just go ahead and follow our own procedures, suspend the rules if we were to so consider it.
And we can take that cemetery stuff out too.
Yes.
I don't know where that kind of ghostly present.
Let's go to work session on this. I think the committee is ready to act. We'll go to work session on House Bill 2612. The Vice Chair makes a move
that the rules be suspended for the purpose of making a word change in the dash two amendments to House Bill 2612.
The Vice Chair moves that the rules be suspended. Normally, this would cause the folks in the Senate Secretary's office to fly down the stairwell to the very office. Do this before all arrive. There's a motion to suspend the rules. Are there any questions on the motion? Any objections?
Dexter's the only one that's nervous back there.
No questions on the motion. Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none. Rules are suspended. The Vice Chair calls for recognition and is so recognized.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the dash two amendments to House Bill 2612 on line 5 be changed to reflect removing the word a criminal and replacing it with an intentional.
There's a motion to amend that two words on page one of the A2 amendments, line 5, from a criminal to an intentional. Do all the committee members clearly understand the word change in its import? Let the record show an assertion by nods. Is there any objection to the motion? And seeing none, so ordered. Mr. Vice Chair, you recognize?
I would move the A2 amendments as amended.
The A2 amendments.
H.B. 2612.
The A2 amendments as amended are moved. Are there any questions on the motion? Any objections to the motion? So moved.
Mr. Chair.
It's ordered, excuse me.
I would move the A3 amendments to H.B. 2612.
The Vice Chair moves the A3 amendments to House Bill 2612. Are there any questions of the motion? Any objections to the motion? So ordered.
Mr.
Vice Chair.
I would move House Bill 2612A in gross as amended to the floor of the due pass.
The motion is to move House Bill 2612 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Are there any questions to the motion? Hearing no questions, are there any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, it is so ordered. Colleagues, I appreciate the fact that Mr. DiLorenzo and company have removed the bones of contention on this issue. And helped us avoid a fatal mistake in the transfer of these properties, a tax consequential.
Let's entomb this one, all right?
We shall do. I believe that...
I'd rather cremate it, but if you want to do something with it, entomb it, okay?
I'm proud of the undertaking that this committee has
taken. Oh, no, stop.
I think this is not necessarily a monumental decision, but it certainly was not the death of reason. I think we're on hallowed ground here with our...
Great signs of truth living, they're no use
moving
for
on.
Dead.
It is the quick and the dead in this process. This happens to be a quick one. Who wants to carry this little gem to the Senate floor? Any volunteers for carrying?
Well, I think this is Senator Minnis's. Yeah,
Senator Minnis, by affirmation, will you carry this trophy to the floor? Thank you. This order, Senator Minnis will carry. Thank you for the liberty and your cooperation, colleagues. Edward. House Bill 2677 appears on the agenda, and we have an orientation from staff. Morning, Mr. Warner. How are you this morning?
Morning, Mr. Chair.
We have before us House Bill 2677. I see that Representative Merkley is in the audience. Let's have a brief orientation, set the stage for Representative Merkley's presentation. Come forward, Representative, please, and your colleague.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2677A comes to you from the House Revenue Committee, where it passed with an 8-0 vote. It passed on the House floor 49-1. What it does is give the taxpayer the option of requiring the Department of Revenue to directly deposit a refund in a designated account. So the effective date for this is January 1, 2002. There was an amendment to the original version in the House that limited the option to personal income taxpayers and excluded corporate income taxpayers. There is a fiscal impact on it. Basically, the Department of Revenue is here to testify on administration of it. They essentially felt that it was built into their budgetary plans that were already underway in the governor's budget, and felt that eventually there would be some savings once this startup was in place.
I thought you were going to tell us that we had to add 11 more staff members. Direct deposit. Okay, good. Thank you for the orientation. Representative Merkley, you're here to present your case in favor of this good bill, so you are recognized.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Jeff Merkley. I'm here with my constituent, Glenn Hartell, to testify on this bill. This is an idea that originated with Glenn. He proposed that we have the opportunity to increase safety and increase savings, and it sounded like a good idea to me and to my colleagues in the House. I'd like to invite Glenn to present his own idea, and then I might add a couple of comments.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Glenn Hartell. I live in East Portland. I'm retired, and I'm an Oregon taxpayer. I support the legislation measure that's being heard. Some of the benefits that I deemed through this bill, it started out essentially as a seniors bill. Seniors don't have to worry about a check in the mailbox or their check being on the street. If they're confined to the home or confined to a hospital, there's no muggings involved. There's no stealing from the mailbox. If they're on vacation, check goes directly to the bank. No concerns there. Apartment dwellers would have the same concerns. Some of theirs would extend to maybe it's a apartment that the mail goes to one central mailbox and then is distributed. That would not happen, so there would not be the possibility of check being lost or someone pilfering the check. To me, this is a win-win situation for everyone involved. The state saves on postage, materials, envelopes, paper, etc., manning eventually. Everything is done electronically by tape. It's an easy and safe solution to a large concern for senior citizens in the state of Oregon. As everyone knows, Oregon is one of the leaders and concerns for senior citizens throughout the nation. This is just one more step to show the rest of the United States that Oregon really cares about seniors and safety. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, I would add just a comment or two. It was pointed out to me that the timing of refund checks and kicker checks is something that makes them relatively easy prey for people who are thinking about stealing those checks from the boxes. And that also just the process of going to collect the checks is one that is challenging for some seniors. And this is an area where private industry has long preceded state government because of the savings of depositing checks electronically. So it's really a win-win. Down the road, there'll be a lot less postage and a lot less paper used up and a lot more safety, and it's a good bill, and we're pleased to be here to present it.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Thank you, Mr. Hertel. Any questions for the panel? Hearing and seeing none, let's go into a work session on Senate Bill, House Bill 2677. Senator Minnis is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House Bill 2677 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. If the Vice Chair will allow me to make that motion.
Sounds like a wonderful idea. Is there any questions on the motion? Any objections to the motion?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a
Senator Castillo.
I just have a comment. I'd like to thank Representative Merkley's constituent for his idea here. It's a great idea. It's helpful to everyone and saves the state some money. Thank you. It's great.
I think the sentiments expressed by Senator Castillo to both Representative Merkley and Mr. Hertel reflect a couple of things that are features of the Oregon legislature. One is the accessibility of legislators and responsiveness to citizens who bring their good ideas. Also demonstrates one of the true facts of legislative history in the state of Oregon. Most of the good ideas come from outside the building. So there's, thank you very much. We have Senator Kirk, or excuse me, Vice
Chair. He's the other one.
Yes, exactly. And Vice Chair Byers.
So it just proves that a citizen doesn't have to spend $500,000 through the initiative process to get something fixed.
Well, if it's a good idea like this, Senator Byers, I think you're absolutely right. There's a motion on the floor from Senator Minnis. Is there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, then so ordered. Then we will move this out with a due pass recommendation to the floor, and we need a carrier for this bill. It's a great bill. It's a bill that affects seniors. I'm inclined to look at Senator Starr as the carrier of the bill.
The great
I may be the senior on this committee, all right. But I'll take care of this bill.
Senator Starr will carry it, and I think this is just a really great example of how the system can respond to a good idea. Again, I thank Representative Merkley for being responsive to his constituent, and thank Mr. Hertel for the energy and the effort it takes to educate the legislators about the idea. Also, the Department of Revenue that stood forward and said that this was a good idea that they would adopt, and the fact that it has no negative revenue impacts makes it a really good thing, too. So, thank you. Let us move then to Senate Bill 2777. Close the public hearing, work session on House Bill 2677. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2777.
Mr. Chair, 2777 comes to you from the Legislative Council. It's the so-called revisers bill that looks at, makes technical changes in language of tax statutes. It passed the House Revenue Committee on a 5-0 vote. Even though there was four abstentions, there was still a great deal of interest in this. Four excused absences, there was a great deal of interest in this bill. It did pass on the floor 55-0. Dexter Johnson is here to describe, he's the author of the bill, and describe the changes that were made. I think the biggest issue that came up in the House discussion was the difference between substantive and technical changes, and Dexter can explain that.
So we shall ask the public hearing on House Bill 2777 to be opened, and also that Mr. Johnson comes forward.
32 pages of Scribner's errors?
Yeah. So everyone supported this bill, and they sent it to us to amend it again.
Mr. Chair and members, good morning. Texas Council Legislative Council Office. 2777 is the tax revisers bill, this session's version of the bill. It comes to you every session that basically makes corrects the occasional Scrivener's error, first of all, and deletes obsolete text and makes changes to conform existing tax statutes to legislative form and style, and makes occasional clarification change, non-substantive clarifications in the wording of laws.
So, Mr. Johnson, what we have before us is an utterly boring and inconsequential piece of legislation.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
That is absolutely necessary to the functioning of state government.
Well, actually...
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, you've heard the voluminous testimony offered on this bill. Are there any questions for Mr. Johnson? Hearing and seeing none, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2777.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Would move House Bill 2777 to the floor with a due pass.
Colleagues, you've heard the chairman make the motion to move House Bill 2777 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any questions on that motion?
No, brother.
And are there any objections to the motion? And it is so ordered. Colleagues, this is an utterly boring, but arguably necessary bill. The chair will carry the bill on the floor. It is utterly boring and arguably necessary.
Still my lips.
Still order.
We want
Senator Carper is recognized against the chair's better judgment. Well, we have a record set here today. Let it be noted that Senator Corcoran has nothing to say. Okay, colleagues, let's...
I'll say it if you want, but you'll just be insulted. Bills are always carried appropriately.
Yes, well, we have an agenda for next week. I wonder if the able committee staff, Mr. Warner, wouldn't be caught flat-footed if I asked him to orient the committee briefly to the... work of the committee for next week, and
not much.
You do have
time.
You can find it.
How about if you have a unable representative?
Yes,
we'll be looking at Senate Bill 684. Well, let me put my glasses on. 684, which is another boring, redundant, and then we'll be looking at Senate Bill 745. Lisbeth will be carrying those. And then the rest of the week is to be announced.
Excellent. Thank you, Senator Corcoran.
And there's no revenue impact on the to be announced.
Senator Corcoran, probably meaningless deal with bill.
School funding in Eastern Oregon.
Put on the public record.
Senator Corcoran is a born legislative revenue officer. Got the flair for it.
And the personality.
Or the lack thereof.
Mr. Chair, on the schedule for next week, which will be posted this afternoon, on Monday we have a Senate Bill 684 and Senate Bill 745, which are both at the request of Senator Dukes. Those are scheduled for public hearing, possible work session. On Tuesday we have three bills that come to you from the State Treasurers Association. Senate Bill 580, Senate Bill 581, and Senate Bill 526, and they have to do with management of local government treasury accounts. So they're administrative bills, and we'll have the treasurer of Coos County will be here to describe those bills for you. Also on the schedule, Senate Bill 188, which is sponsored by the chair. Will be scheduled for Tuesday as well. A public hearing on Senate Bill 67 on Wednesday, that's the capital gains bill, which is at the request of AOI, so there'll be a lot of discussion around that, a major policy decision. And then on Thursday for work session, we have planned Senate Bill 252, Senate Bill 509, and Senate Bill 61, and those all should be familiar numbers to you. Those are the bills relating to the school formula, and Ozzie Rose will be here to talk about what COSA's feelings are in terms of those changes and has a proposal
that he's talked with the chair about and we'll talk with the committee about.
Colleagues, on that agenda day, my intention is the chair is to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 61. Since, as you recall, that is the chapter where we left off. We were in Senate Bill 61. We had the discussion about not really moving forward on any of these funding adjustments within the formula until we had the recommendations of Mitchell and Rose, who represent the professionals in the field. They will come back on that day, and they'll make their recommendations to the committee. My intention is that we find a bill in which to put all of the adjustments in the school funding formula, and that we do that so that people have one bill to consider that essentially comprises the work of this committee on school funding formula adjustments, and we move it out of this committee. Yes, sir.
You know, Mr. Chair, I talked to Ozzie again about the his proposal on the federal forest receipts, and the only difficulty I have with it is, you know, he says that it's just a matter of perspective, that there's $18 million in there for the small schools under his formula, but I say it's only nine. It's only nine of new money. And I'm not.
We agree, Mr. Corcoran, or Senator Corcoran. We agree on that.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that, you know, I mean, I understand that we have to get to a compromise somewhere and move this thing along. And, you know, I still, I mean, Ozzie is a better magician than Speaker Simmons. I mean, Ozzie comes in and says, instead of taking $20 million and giving it to the schools and $9 million and giving it to the fast-growing school districts, I'm going to turn that into no money for the fast-growing school districts and $9 million for the small schools. And it's like, and the rest goes in the formula. You know, so anyway, I'm a little bit...
Let's not leave this good discussion in the locker room. It's part of the public record, but the fact of the matter is I have some concerns about the fast-growing districts, as you do.
Mm.
And I have some concerns about whether or not we are interpreting correctly what the Congress intended in the federal forest proceedings.
Are you going to get something by that time, Mr. Chair?
Well, you know, Senator Corcoran, we tried to leave the processes in the legislative council to their own timing schedule, because in point of fact, they are at the epicenter of every single discussion in this building. But I have requested that some product be produced that will be usable to this committee before that date. That's why we scheduled for that period of time. But all of our members in this committee, without exception, are passionate about this education. So I expect you all on that Thursday to be here, to be engaged, and we will work that bill and we'll come to conclusions on, you know, what we move out of this committee. Mr. Vester.
Just to be clear, when you say all the school, are you thinking of the formula and the ESD in the same bill?
No. The ESD bill, I think we do the same process with. We have good recommendations from Campbell and committee and the group that studied ESD. I think we need to consider those things. Naturally, they affect how we fund schools. But I want to try to focus only on the formula funding, 519, 509, 61, all the stuff that we've heard. I think this committee has a great background and a great a basis for understanding. We may have differences. They may be great or small. It's time to go ahead and come up with something that we can move forward.
So by that time, Ozzie's will be in the legislative amendment format?
Yeah, I think what we need to do is make sure that get those things clarified. And if we had to hear and come to a consensus on the committee and then get amendments made to a particular bill, that'd be fine.
Well, that gives Steve enough time to have a
run
so we can see the impact.
No. I've already asked that question.
Oh, you have.
I've asked that question, and it is a pig and a poke, too. That's the other problem with this, is that we can send it over, and I know everybody's getting frustrated and we've got to move this thing, but part of Ozzie's new proposal has within it creating a set of criteria by which small school districts, or I guess any school districts, you set a level of base services that they can or can't provide, like in a small high school setting, and then they can appeal for some money out of this fund to get it. Well, the criteria is not established.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. And my point is, and his point to me is, that within that turnaround period between the Senate and the House, those criteria will be spelled out. Now, the question is, it is an article of faith. You know, we've asked for performance. What we've got is a formula, and there's a lot of assumptions. One is that the amount of funding
is agreed upon in this building. I think that's a bigger leap of faith than any other thing. The other thing is that the criterion by which these either one-third or one-quarter of these dollars, depending on which approach we take as a committee, is accessible has not been described to us, so we don't know.
Yeah.
However, the chairman's willing to suspend his own disbelief and follow this process across the hallways to the House side and make sure that what comes out of there will gain concurrence from this committee. And I guess what we need to do is make sure that what we do here, if they amend it on the other side, we have another opportunity for concurrence. I think we will.
A little conference committee.
Pardon me?
Just have a little conference committee.
We could do that, too.
Mm-hmm. Or a big conference. I think it would be really helpful to hear from the House. Go ahead. Yes.
I think you're right, Senator Corcoran. Senator Minister's suggestion about a conference committee is an excellent suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's note that for the record and make it part of our consideration. Senator Starr?
I am one who would very much want to contribute to that final product, but Thursday is the day that I'm excused from legislative business, Thursday and Friday of next week. So.
Senator, I anticipate that we'll have a full witness calendar for that morning, and it would surprise me greatly if we were able to take action in work session on that Thursday. So, I mean, I just want to lay it out for the committee. There's a lot to consider here. We have strong feelings about this issue, but so do the rest of our constituents in Oregon. I imagine we'll have a pretty full hearing there. So it wouldn't surprise me greatly if we had to carry that issue over to the following week for action.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Castillo?
So before we take final action on the bill, on this new omnibus-type bill, we are going to have a run that shows us how it affects every single school district in the state.
Unquestionably.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chair, one thing that might help, I don't know if everyone's gotten the one sheet that Ozzie put together.
I hope they have. We have to be distributed.
Everybody on the committee, have they gotten
it? Have we all received Ozzie's message from...
I haven't seen it.
It's a one-pager.
I'm looking for it.
I'll make sure Senator Starr gets it. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it.
And I know Mr. Rose was in distribution on that. I know that we shared it out with leadership mm-hmm. and others. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll make sure.
And colleagues, I apologize. I made the assumption that all of you got the copy of that the same day that I got the copy of that. But I will make
for
sure.
For a very reasonable sum, Senator Castillo, I will provide a copy of that.
It's the press of a button, one might say. All right. Any questions about our agenda?
Just one admonition, and that is that for John Marshall and Ozzie and whomever else it is that's kind of putting together their proposal, probably would be a good idea if they would visit with us individually and share rather than coming in, because they may be able to preempt some questions by talking to us beforehand.
You know, I think there's an ample opportunity between now and the following Thursday for the chair and others to remind people you better work our committee.
Right.
You better talk to our people.
Right, and hopefully they're going to be flexible and where they can adapt to the concerns of the committee members try to do that as opposed to just backing themselves into a corner.
The chairman will light candles all weekend on that score. Any other questions?
Well, I hope not. Yeah. There might be a blackout.
Colleagues, thank you very much for an excellent hearing. We are adjourned until Monday.